one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest.
Exactly.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? A Friday edition of the Tall Can Audio podcast, coming to you from our studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada. As always, I am Matt Robinson, sitting across the table today from our buddy Steve Bunda. What's happening, man?
Oh, Matt, it's a good day. It's a good day. We're getting some fight news. Things are going on.
Yeah.
The Tall Can Audio fans didn't see me sneak into this place again, so I didn't have anyone chasing me.
It's an evening recording this time, yeah. so maybe they'd gone home for the day or
they're
something.
Not used to me being in the evening. I've been more of an afternoon pod guy lately, and
yep.
I think it threw them off because they haven't seen me at all yet, so it's good.
And we got Bunda with his hair down because he's post-work this time. He doesn't have to go to work here afterwards, so we can have a pint or two here while we're chatting. Give us a follow on social media at Tall Can Audio. Make sure you're subscribed to the pod wherever you're hearing us right now. It's been a pretty cool week around here. Of course, Lever Sage on 1271 on the low end of the cool scale. But before that, episode 1270, we got to talk to Andrea from the Bytown Beer Sisters about a cool event they've got coming up. Highly recommend you back and check that one out. 1269. What do we do on 1269? It's been a busy week around here, man. I'm counting backwards now. Oh, 1269 was our buddy Dean Brown, play-by-play man from the Ottawa Senators.
Oh, Dino.
We reflected on the 20-year anniversary of the big brawl between the Sens and the Flyers. So that was a pretty fun one to do. And 1268, our friend Angela Thompson from Lake of Bays Brewery was here. All of it up now at talkandaudio.com or wherever you're hearing us. And we're still cruising through the Lake of Bays pints here, man, because she left you a care package as well.
Yeah, once again, Angela, I think we love you. I know I do, because it seems like every single time we roll in here, we've got some beautiful pints from
Lake of Bays.
Lake of Bays. Yeah. And what do you got today? What are you going to start with?
So this will be my third pod of the week drinking Lake of Bays, because I drank some Lake of Bays when she was in here. And then Lever was here, like I said, on Thursday's pod. So he was into the Lake of Bays, and so I went along with him. I'm going to do the same thing with you here today. Only when he was here, I drank their dark lager, which was called Moonstruck. That was terrific. I love that beer. Mm-hmm. And this one, though, I'm going with the Sparkhouse Red Ale. It is one of my all-time favorite craft beers. She included one or two of those in the pack she left for me. So I will ride with that one today. What about you, man? Because there was six sitting out there. Which one did you choose?
Yeah, I went with the Lake of Bays Last Run white IPA, 6% beer. So I'm going to give that one a rip.
A white IPA, because you don't see a lot of those. I have had that one before. I think, given how many times we've had Angela in here, I think I've tried almost everything that Lake of Bays has to offer by now. But I have only had that one once or twice.
Pretty good taste. Yeah. I think I've tried this one before. I'm not positive, but I can't remember. I know I haven't tried many white IPAs. I've barely even heard of them if I have, but it's still a very good, smooth-tasting IPA. Not too strong, not too extra hoppy, but it's very smooth. I like that. So very tasty. Once again, thank you so much, Angela, for being a sweetheart.
She's been taking good care of us all week on the podcast, and as you said, long before that as well. Mm-hmm. As we were calling it when she came in here, it was the 1 year anniversary since her first appearance on the podcast. So the pack, the six pack she gave to me was in a little, you know, one of those gift bags with the tissue on top and stuff, which was kind of cool. And I had been calling it the 1 year beeriversary, which isn't all that clever. It's not all that whatever. And we realized when I was talking to Lever, it was right there in front of me. I totally whiffed on it. It's a tall caniversary is what that should have been called. And I just didn't have it, man. I just whiffed on it completely. So thank you to Angela Thompson from the Lake of Bays Brewery for hooking us up. Look, you and I, when you come in here, it's all about the fights. That's what we like to talk about. UFC, there's also some boxing news, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But we would be remiss, given the fact that we are sitting here on Thursday night, less than 24 hours to the NHL trade deadline. We've obviously got to hit on this a little bit, because there's been some more moves here over the last day or two. And I'm curious, what maybe stands out to you, who you like, you know, who's made some smart moves? I guess we could start, and I don't know whether you'll consider this a smart move or not, man. I'll leave it up to you. The Toronto Maple Leafs went out and spent another two draft picks on bringing in Joel Edmondson. not exactly a speedster, not exactly a skill guy, but he is a guy with a reputation for playoff hockey. He is 6'5", 220, a physical defenseman, a guy who's known for his cross checks in front of the net, which is something the Leafs have experienced at the other end, but rarely had in their own lineup to dish them out in front of their net. I don't know, man. I'm a little down on it. I'm curious what you think about it.
Yeah, I'm in a okay. It's not a big deal, but their blue line clearly needs to get better, and they at least know that because they went out and already traded for Ilya Lyubushkin again and then bringing in Joel Edmondson. Edmondson, the one thing I like about him is he does have the playoff experience, right? And
got a cup with St. Louis, trip to the finals with Montreal.
Exactly, and that's something that this roster is really missing. Like, that's the thing. Like, they've got a lot of guys that have, you know, first round one and done. And, you know, they didn't
sure do.
They didn't bring back Ryan O'Reilly, who, you know, I thought was a great addition last year.
Shen, same situation last year.
Yeah, Shen as well. Like, guys that have played in the playoffs and won cups and know how to do it when you get to these, you know, tough spots in the game sevens. Mm-hmm. So the one thing about Edmondson I'll say is that, but again, I don't see him as being a difference maker on the blue line, but I see him as more of the Luke Shen. I like him, you know, coming into the lineup a lot more than I liked Lyubushkin coming back. And just more because, again, he has that pedigree of, you know, being in a cup final before and knowing what it's like. So I like that addition. I look at it as a Luke Shen where I liked it last year, and that's what I kind of do.
See, I didn't like the Shen one last year, but he turned out to be much better than I expected him to be. When he got here, he was almost the perfect partner for Morgan Rielly, right? That went really well. He was good in the playoffs. I was wrong about that one. So I'm hoping to be wrong again, but I don't think who knows, right?
Shen surprised me as a skater. If Edmondson can skate well in his own zone and move the puck out and break it out, because that was one thing that, you know, I thought, okay, well, great. We got Luke Shen. What's he going to do? Anytime he gets the puck, fly it down the boards and then basically give the puck away. But he was very good at moving with the puck and skating it out of his zone.
Or at least getting it onto Rielly's stick so he could do it. Yeah. I think the underlying, you know, if you're a fancy stat person, which I kind of am a little bit, it suggests that Edmondson doesn't have that in him. He's not a very good passer. He's not a very good breakout guy, but he is able to step in and stop a cycle, right? He is able to make a hit and stop people from just buzzing freely around your zone. So I certainly understand the idea, and he's big and mean, right? And I always kind of balk at this, that the playoffs turn into this different animal. I don't believe that should be the case, but it is the case. So I guess this is kind of what you have to do, but I'm just down on the fact that I think every year they do this. They kind of downgrade their talent a little bit in favor of getting ready for playoff hockey, and now you don't really have an identity. You have all these high-end offensive skilled players up front, and you have no one on the back end who can get them the puck. So, because it's not really like McCabe isn't really that great of a breakout guy either, right? Like, it sort of feels to me like these moves are being made to, again, put Liljegren in the press box when the playoffs start, and I don't know if he's earned a spot in the playoff roster or not, but like, if you're going to take him out and now you have Lyubushkin and Edmondson and Simon Benoit or Jake McCabe, like, you don't have a lot of slick skating, good breakout pass guy, and so those offensive forwards you have don't always get the puck as much as they should, right? Because you don't have the guys to break it out. So that's my one concern.
Yeah, I wouldn't be taking Liljegren out of the lineup at all. I think he's solid. He's the right shot defenseman that does move the puck well.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you look at the Benoits and the Lagessins and you know, the guys that they've called up all throughout the year, there's some guys I've never even heard of that they played on their blue.
Max Lajoie has been kicking around.
Yeah, Max Lajoie hasn't been a prospect, you know, in years. Yeah. But the names that have been brought up and played, and, you know, it's just like, okay, cool. The one thing I'll say is, that, you know, those two additions are good in that sense, that I think that they do add a bit more size on the back end, which I agree with you. I do think that they kind of go out and they wait till the playoffs come around or the trade deadline comes around and they trade for these kind of guys, and the idea of, well, it's tough in the playoffs, so we got to have, and I'm kind of with you, but I think that Lagessin has kind of taken a step back the last little while.
Yep.
And I think that's where they went.
And Gio's not the same anymore. And
I think Gio is a guy that needs to be watching from the press box. Last year in the playoffs, I think so, like I said, Lilligren's a guy, I don't think you never take him off the ice. He's one of your best puck moving defensemen, especially on the right side. I think that he's been really good. And I think even playing him with Rielly is good. I don't know if they go out and do more. I think that they do need to do a bit more, especially on the forward side. Like, I'd love for them to
find a middle six center somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be beautiful, right? Yeah. And that's a hard thing.
I don't love Domi at 2C in a playoff matchup. I think you're going to get run over defensively, right? If it's going to be him, Bertuzzi, and Nylander, that's not a line you can trust in their own end at all.
No.
In a playoff matchup against a Boston who's going to be well coached. It's going to stick to their system.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised.
And I will give him credit because, you know what, I've done a good amount of shitting on him in this podcast, but Tyler Bertuzzi has showed up last few games. We were texting the night he had a hat trick, and it was, you know, I think that was his first goal. I think he had like seven goals on the season, and then my buddy Bobby McCann started showing up and surpassing him in goals, and I was thinking, there's no way that this is happening right now. And then sure enough, Bert showed up, and he's been playing a lot better. So I'll give him some credit.
100%.
I want to see more of it, and I want to see him in the playoffs for sure, but I still think it was a bad signing. But he's getting me to say, okay.
Because the whole reason is, like, he's a playoff type of player. It was supposed to be the whole thing. So if he's heating up now and he's going to produce in the playoffs, I'll ignore everything he did for the first three quarters
of the season. I'll be forgiving.
Yeah,
100%. Just like Austin Matthews, though. Like, it's cool that he's scoring at the pace that he did and that, what, he's up to 54 now after his game winner the other night in overtime.
Yep.
But I do want to see how he is in the playoffs. If he gets the 70, cool. If he does all this stuff, it's cool. But I don't really care. I don't really care about what these guys do in the regular season. Joseph Wall, he's healthy now. I'm happy about that.
Believe it.
I know.
You and Lever on the same page.
Yeah.
Lever went on a tirade the other day
about how
doing it in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's where the Leafs are at, though. And even for you as a fan, I'm sure, and a lot of people as fans, it's like you look at this team and I don't really give a crap what they do during the regular season.
It's not going to work in the playoffs if the big guys don't do it.
No, and they could be the Boston Bruins. Look at last year.
Yeah.
Bruins were the best team by far.
Yep.
And what happened? They got ousted.
Yep.
Like, what the heck happened there? And the Leafs are in a spot now where I've been burned so many times. You've been burned so many times.
Sure,
you know, you try and get invested. You try and get excited. This is their year. Well, you know what? I do like a lot of the makings of this team. I think that, you know, my concerns are with the obvious. You know, John Tavares is obviously not John Tavares anymore.
Yep.
He's still, you know, okay and a guy. But I'm worried about his skating and what he could do in the playoffs. I've never seen much out of him in the playoffs except for last year in the first round. He kind of showed up and then disappeared in the second round. Other than Matthews and Luke
Shen. They all disappeared in the second round.
Well, Matthews and Luke Shen, I thought, were their best players in the playoffs, and I thought Joseph Wall was, you know, a little bit okay, but I thought when, you know, Samsonov was kind of like,
then he gets hurt and he's yanked out.
And that's kind of what they were.
But everything they're doing here around the deadline is nibbling around the edges. That's all you can do is try and fortify it. And when push comes to shove, it's going to have to be Matthews. It's going to have to be Marner. It's going to have to be Nylander. They're going to have to do it or it's not going to go. That's just the way it's going to be. I was a little surprised that it was Vegas who stepped up to grab Noah Hanifin. And I'm not surprised that they did something big. I just had not heard anywhere that they were in on that. I'd been hearing Tampa, right? I'd been hearing maybe New York or the Panthers. And Vegas goes out and adds a guy like that to what is already perhaps the best blue line in the Western Conference. It's a big physical blue line. They add a guy who can play with skill like this. He's a little younger than some other guys, too, 27. I don't know whether he'll re-sign there. There had been a lot of talk that he was hoping to get to Tampa and sign there long-term. But this is a little like Florida in the sense that Nevada is a tax-free state.
Yeah.
It's warm weather. It's a good team. So maybe when he gets to Vegas and fits in there, maybe they're able to re-sign him. Did you see that one coming at all? And what do you think of it now that he's there?
I did not see it coming. And when you started this question about hockey and we started talking about it, you asked me who I've liked and whatever it is. Well, I went from, you know what? No one's really done anything to really catch my... Oh, here's Vegas.
Always.
Off the top rope with Noah Hanifin. And I was...
And Anthony Mantha. Go grab a middle six winger. Like, not
speed.
Bad. Yeah.
Speed and size. Mantha's not a little guy
either.
He's
not.
That's the thing that Vegas has done. Is they've done a good job of bringing back the old West Coast, the meat and potatoes hockey, right?
Physical
the
hockey,
California road trip
big
used
boy.
To be
oh
like the,
God.
You know, the big LA Kings,
now
the big
cakewalk,
Anaheim Ducks, the big San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
Now it's like, all right, well, the big team is in Vegas and they're huge on the back end, like you said.
Yeah, if you don't come out of California these days with at least 4 points, you've messed it up badly. But you just go out and be happy to get one, right?
Like, it's so true.
Yeah.
And that's what made the Hamburglar run so good and so much more exciting back in like 2015 for the Sens. Is I think it got kicked off when it's like, all right, they lost the game at home, and then they're like, oh well, they're screwed now. They're going out west, and that's and then all of a sudden they shut out the LA. It's like, what? Okay, here comes the Hamburglar. But no, it's Vegas is the team right now, especially with the addition of Noah Hanifin.
Yep.
I've already liked them a lot. Like they're in the spot where Tampa was a couple years ago, where Mark Stone got injured. Now it looks like he won't be back for the rest of the year. So here he comes, LTIR.
Yeah.
Now they can go out and add some bodies, added a bit more cap space, and they're able to move some guys around. I think Vegas is a favorite to repeat, and I think out of the West, they're the best team in the West. So I like them a lot. You know, whether they're the best or not, I don't care, but I think they are the best, and I can see them going right back to the Stanley Cup final, and especially with an addition like that, I don't think they're done. Like, and
Edmonton's been good too. Like, it looks like those two are going to have to play each other.
Exactly.
If not in round one, then round two for sure at the latest, if they both get that far. So both those teams are loading up, right? Like the Oilers went out and got Troy Stetcher today. They'd already gotten Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick. So like they're going all in. And at some point, those two guys
Former Leaf, Sam Carrick.
Those two teams are going to run headlong right into each other very early in the playoffs. And somebody who had big hopes this year and spent big at the deadline is going to go home early. You're thinking it's Edmonton, eh?
Well, Edmonton's in the same boat as the Leafs, right? And they have a difference
Edmonton
maker.
Doesn't want to hear that.
No, and but again, like, you know, they've had the best player on the planet on their team for years, and two of the best, right? Like, Leon hasn't been a slouch.
Nope.
And I think that's the big thing for Edmonton is they need to show up in the playoffs now, because every year it's they're disappointed. Oh, they're fired up. And how bad were they at the beginning of the year, right? There was, like, what are they going to do? Is McDavid going to get traded? Blah, blah, blah. And, like, how many wins did they have in the first 20 games? Like, they were terrible.
It was terrible.
And then all of a sudden they just, you know, Connor McDavid became Connor McDavid again.
He got
but
healthy, yeah.
Between him and Leon, like, they need to show up in the playoffs.
And somebody started stopping pucks out there, too.
Oh, that was the other thing.
Yeah.
Our old pal Jack Campbell really didn't
still
do much to help them out.
The minors, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been tough on them, but I think that they're a team that once they get, like, they need to show up in the playoffs, too, and I'm not saying that they don't, but they haven't. So, much like the Leafs, it's kind of show me what you can do, but for me, Vegas is the team right now, especially with the Noah Hanifin. Like, again, like you said, that's a big blue line. Like, that's not just a big, like, that's a tough blue line to, like, good luck in their own, in their zone, right?
Yep.
And good penalty killing guys too. Like the
well,
one
McNabb,
name
Alec Martinez, Shea Theodore, you're adding
Hanifin
and Petrangelo. Like it's
Aiden Hill's been a great goaltender this year, and you wonder why. Well, he doesn't have to see anything.
Right.
The skyscrapers in front of him are blocking everything, man. It's doing good. And
I
saw the other day, too, Colton Parayko is a name that's, you know, Leafs have been kicking around, and a bunch of teams are kicking around. I'm curious to see.
Scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, where he goes or what happens there. But I was always worried that, you know, he might go at a reunion time in Vegas with, you know, his old boy Pete. So, I'm not sure, but maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't think so. I think they're back end. You're sitting someone that's a pretty damn good defenseman now, right? And I've always been a huge fan of McNabb. I thought he was such an underrated defenseman that they've always added. And, you know, between Petrangelo and, you know, all the guys they're adding, I think Vegas is good. Maybe they could add an extra forward or two, but like you said, they've already added a couple. They're in a good spot, and I think 100%. Vegas is the team to beat right now, especially in the Western Conference. And if Edmonton wants to keep going, by all means, but I need to see them do it first.
At the time you and I are sitting here, Boston is just getting ready to play Toronto, but they, they seem to be the only team so far.
Is it not annoying? Sorry, Maddie, to cut you off here, but, you know, how many years in a row have we kind of known by the trade deadline that there's a pretty good chance the Leafs are playing Boston?
Yeah. It takes a little suspense out of the rest of the season.
It really does.
For sure.
Because now you're like, you're in adding players, but you're looking, and I mean, sure, things can happen.
But
the odds and the math look like you're playing
100%.
Boston.
100%.
Which Bruins fans, I'm sure, are happy about.
Yeah, certainly happier than we are. But I like, they're getting ready to play Toronto tonight on Thursday, as you and I sit here. So by the time the good listener hears this Friday morning, maybe Boston will have done something. But right now, they seem to be the only one of the big contenders in, you know, that kind of top group who haven't done anything yet, right? The Panthers went out and grabbed Tarasenko, although I guess the Lightning really haven't done very much yet, but they're a ways down the standings. But Toronto's kind of nibbled around the edges. Boston really hasn't done anything. And I think they're going to want to do something at center. I can't imagine they want to walk into a round one matchup against, you know, Zacha, or with Zacha and Charlie Coyle as their top two centers. Maybe I'm wrong, but they're up against it. They don't have a lot of prospects left to deal because they've been doing it for so long. Do you expect by 3 o'clock they'll have done something, or is this a kind of stand pat year for the Bruins? Or are they going to have to try and keep up with what everybody's doing around them?
Yeah, I think that they like their core, right? I think the Boston Bruins are in a spot where last year, you know, they added a couple guys and they weren't really sure what to do, right? It was Nick Foligno, I believe, last year. And
Dmitry Orlov was
were some big additions. And then, you know, what happened? Like I said, they had the best season ever. And the next thing you know, they're, you know, out of the playoffs so quickly. And it was like, oh, okay, well, what happened to this team that was the juggernaut all regular season? So maybe this year they're like, you know what, let's just kind of keep it status quo, see how things go. I don't know. I think that we're going to see a lot more with the bust. You know, the best part is seeing James Duthie tweet out every time there's a trade that he's all grumpy because everyone knows how trade deadline day can be. Yeah. But I still think that there's some teams that
he's
are going to be looking.
He said Kyle Dubas, he wants sleep on it on the Jake Gensel offers. Wait and do it tomorrow.
Well, that's the thing, right? So I think that the Bruins make a move. Maybe it's not as big as we thought. Maybe it's an outside the, you know, edges like the Leafs are doing kind of thing, like you said.
Still talk out there that if the Canucks could get their hands on Gensel, they would move Lindholm to Boston.
Kind of sounds like that happened. Is going to happen too, right? It's so. Yeah. You know, I mean, 2 days ago, it felt like it was happening, right? That's the thing. Yep. Like Jake Gensel was already, you know, kind of getting involved with trade talks and ready to go. Pittsburgh's a very interesting team. I think there's Sidney Crosby. Does he get traded? Vancouver's a team. We joked about it before we got on the air, but there was a report the Leafs, the Leafs, the Canucks, and there was
the
a third
Avalanche.
Team, and the Avalanche are all in talks with Sidney Crosby. And
we should say perhaps not a super reputable source, but someone's floating the idea.
It was more than enough for me to bring it up to you and not discredit it.
But should say it wasn't like Dreger or CJ.
It was an account with over 150,000 followers of more of a betting page, and you know, bringing it up. And then I think somebody just quoted and said, if Kyle Dubas trades Sidney Crosby to the Leafs, I'll give him my social insurance number on X or Twitter, whatever the hell you want to call it. But I thought that was exactly how you put it. I don't think in any chance we see Sidney Crosby going to the Leafs, and I don't think that Kyle Dubas would ever help his old team out. But if the Leafs are like, hey, we'll give you the whole world for him, well, then we'll see it. But
if Sid ever leaves, it'll be... It's not happening by, like, tomorrow, right? Like, this will be down the road a little when he sees that this thing is coming apart, has to be rebuilt.
Yeah.
It's not happening by the deadline.
I don't know.
That's an off-season thing.
It's a weird... Teams get desperate, man. Like, that's the thing. It's crazy. I don't see it happening either. Yeah. I don't know. But if a team wants to offer you the world and Sidney wants to play for a cup and they're, you know, the Penguins are having just a terrible year, right? So, you know, they have so many pieces there, whether it be Gensel, Malkin, Letang, Crosby, like
Carlson.
They've got
Jeff Carter. Anybody wants some Jeff Carter?
Yeah, like, hell, I'll take Jeff Carter on the Leafs. Give me, like, that's...
Ugh, no way.
I don't care, man.
He's
give me
falling apart.
Hey, you know what? So is half the dang team. But no, it's you know, I'm just saying, like, it's there's a lot of guys, veteran guys there that I think could get shipped out. I don't see Sidney Crosby, like you said, but it wouldn't surprise me if someone overpays, whether it be Vancouver or Colorado. Those make more sense to me than the Leafs do. But again,
I just don't think there's any chance it happens by the deadline.
I don't know.
If it's ever going to happen, it's an off-season thing. They sit down, they have conversations about the future of the franchise and what he'd like to do. It's anyway.
But there's I still see that there's going to be, you know, I love these next couple days because there is a lot that can happen, I think. And we're going to see a name that gets traded that we weren't expecting.
100%. That's always the fun part. There's always these names out there. Everyone
trade
can see.
Trade bait boards for months.
Yes, exactly. Where you see, you know, everyone knows who the unrestricted free agents are on bad teams, and you go, well, these are the guys that are in play. And there's always something that comes out of nowhere. No one saw that. And maybe we already had it. Maybe it was the Bowen Byram from Colorado to Buffalo for Casey Mittelstadt. Like, no one saw that coming. Those are two young, talented players that clearly just need a change of scenery and a different environment. So maybe we've already had it, but I'm sort of counting on tomorrow getting that that one more kind of, ooh, didn't see that coming. So
yeah.
Hopefully we get a little bit of that. Look, I want to ask you about the UFC. You know that that's where we're going. But let's start with some news. And you and I have debated this sort of thing before. And maybe debated isn't even the right word, but we've certainly talked about it before. The Jake Paul stuff, you know, the kind of freak show element of what he's been up to. And he's fighting, you know, former UFC guys who've had hip replacements and stupid shit like that. And I don't know where this ranks for you. I don't know how much it got your attention, but we did see that Jake Paul is going to box in July against Mike Tyson on Netflix. And there's a couple things that get your attention there. Certainly Mike Tyson is a big name. Mike Tyson is also 58 years old at this point, and Nate Behar of the Ottawa Redblacks actually had a great tweet on Thursday afternoon that said, boxers who are 58 years old are actually much more like 75 years old. Like, those guys have been through some shit.
And Mike Tyson especially.
Yeah, 100%, man, 100%. And the other thing that gets your attention, though, is Netflix. This isn't like you have to go out and you know, watch it on some website or subscribe to a thing you've maybe never heard of before, like some of these thriller cards and this and that. This is on Netflix. That's a big name to get behind you. Lever and I talked on Thursday about Netflix and the play that they're making, trying to get more and more into live sports. Right now, that play is a lot around wrestling, right? They're going to move Monday Night Raw there and show the other pro sports leagues that we are capable of broadcasting live, you know, every night with something important. This is going to draw some eyes. I have no doubt about that. But does this still, to you, and maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth. I've used the word already, and I'm going to use it again, freak show. Does this feel like a freak show to you, Jake Paul boxing a 58-year-old Mike Tyson?
Sounds like a money grab for Mike Tyson, and he knows it. A little disappointed, honestly, in Iron Mike for doing this. This just doesn't seem like his style, but maybe he's in some ways for money. I've never really been into these fights. Like, I watched the first one between, was it him and Floyd Mayweather? Was that one of the first ones? I think I watched that one. I watched the Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. fight.
Oh, man.
And that one was, okay, interesting, nice.
Again, two guys over 50.
Yeah, I was kind of in that sense of it. But I look at this as, okay, I have zero interest. One, the Paul brothers only just fight guys that are either washed up from the UFC, whether it be the Diaz, the Woodleys, the you know, Mayweather. And when I found out Mayweather bet on himself to go to the decision because that was the longest odds, I was like, okay, yeah, this is kind of goofy.
Well, there were moments where it looked like Mayweather was holding them up.
And that there was an angle where it looked like he might have knocked him up or knocked him down, which there were no knockdowns allowed.
Right.
So that's what he did, and that's where it looked like he was holding him up. And I was like, oh, okay. So, and then when you find out
he bet
on himself to go the distance. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. So I know exactly what he was doing.
Right.
I think I read an article too. I think Ariel Helwani or somebody on ESPN, one of their MMA coverage guys, put out a whole thing about this and kind of gave me the storyline that it looks like the Paul brothers are just going to keep fighting guys with some names and then try and get some storylines, and they're going to fight each other in like a trilogy fight, and it's going to be over. But I don't have any interest in it. I don't
Logan's
really care.
Busy at WrestleMania.
The only good thing about this is I kind of want to see is like Mike Tyson maybe just, you know, kind of be a loose cannon, and he just goes in there and he just absolutely like kills one of the Paul brothers by just unloading on it. But I don't, you know, every time I've thought that, whether it be Woodley or Diaz, like if Diaz wouldn't do it, like I don't know what to believe. Like Nick Diaz is the ultimate wild card. This guy used to duck urine testers and drug testers in the UFC. By jumping out of the back. I mean, Nick Diaz more than Nate.
Yeah.
But again, these guys were, you know, kind of goofy. And, you know, between Nate, you know, having a big name and who like a good following, you know, the fact that he didn't have the best outing against the Paul brother in a boxing match, okay. The only thing is that, you know, Mike Tyson is a boxer, but what did he, I think he won like 40-something fights before, is it Jake or Logan? Who's he fighting? I don't even know.
Oh, it's Jake who's fighting Tyson. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jake Paul.
Logan's going to WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. I don't even know who they are anymore because I don't even pay attention. But he's fighting Jake Paul and just thinking, okay, these guys are decent enough boxers to kind of block themselves up. But yeah, like Mike Tyson won like 45, I think, professional boxing fights before Jake Paul was even born.
Yeah.
So he's double his age.
Like
so,
a top 2-3 fighter of all time, Mike Tyson. We're talking Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson. Like these are the guys.
Yeah.
But he's 58.
Well, and that's the way.
So
he's
I don't know
when they fight. And it's like I don't really care. And the one thing is, I think it's taking place in Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah.
Which okay, like that's going to hold quite.
That
a lot
is
of
another
people.
Big part.
Is
of
that
this.
Really going to sell it that many people? Like I don't see there being this much interest in it. Good for
I
them.
I bet it sells, man. I think you and I.
Mike Tyson is a big following, so I think that like that's
and,
the thing.
And so is Jake Paul. Jake Paul is a pop culture name. Just because you and I look down on him, he has followers. He has fans. He's. We're selling Prime energy drinks and we're doing this.
Not anymore,
shit.
Apparently. Oh, okay. Not in Canada, I guess.
No.
They banned them, but.
I don't know, man. I look at it and I don't think it's going to be enough to get my attention. I'll be honest with you. I don't have Netflix. I don't know if you do. There wasn't much on there, so I moved on. I have Crave. Like, it's not like I don't have streaming services. I just don't currently have that one.
Yeah.
But it's. You know, sometimes you circulate around and go, oh, they put this series that I like on there or there's a new movie or whatever. So if I already had Netflix and this is on a Saturday night or something, I don't know. I might watch it. You and I have talked before that I don't. I won't go when it's on DAZN and get an account, or I won't go like to these other places. I just don't care. Like, these are, like you said, fighting up washed up old UFC fighters and this and that, and then claiming to be great. I have no time for this shit. But if I already had a Netflix account and this doesn't cost me anything extra, maybe I'll turn this one on. And it's
if that's a big thing, though, if they make people pay like $5 or even
$10. It's free with Netflix. If you already have a Netflix account. So. So even if you wanted to, like, even this is get a Netflix account just for the month, it's going to be like $12 as opposed to when they were doing it on these other platforms where they were charging like $45 or $50. And like, fuck you, I'm not paying that for this celebrity boxing thing that appears to be rigged.
Yeah.
But this one, if I do turn it on, it's with the hope that Mike Tyson still has it in him at 58 years old to smoke this fucking guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see that. I can't imagine, even if I believe that, you know, the Mayweather thing came with a wink and a nod and an understanding, and I can't imagine Mike Tyson would have agreed to go in there and let's keep it close. Let's have an exhibition. I think if Mike Tyson is doing this at 58 years old, he's going to go in there and try to win the fight. I don't know if he's capable of doing that at 58 years old. I don't know what his speed is like. But you are talking about one of the best of all time. And I hope he serves this fucking kid.
Yeah. And it'd be nice, right? Like, you'd love to believe it. Like I said, if there's ever a guy that's a wild card, I thought it would be Nate Diaz, but it's Mike Tyson. Like you said, this is a guy that I think fights for relevancy in life right now. And that's the thing. It's been a couple years since the Hangover movies. It's been a couple years since his fight with Roy Jones Jr.
The Roy Jones thing was such an embarrassment.
And
though,
that was the thing. Yeah. And he was like, and look, give him the credit. He looked in much better shape than Roy Jones 100%. Jr. did. But at the same time, like you said, you see these videos of him boxing for like 10 seconds and he's got these, still got the crazy speed and whatever. Sure. But what's he doing 2 minutes into the fourth round?
Yep.
Like, that's what I want to know.
Yep.
Like, that's, I need to know where he is. His cardio and conditioning, what's that like? Again, I feel like if there was ever a guy, it would be him that wants to put him in the corner and just unload on him because he wants to be the guy that knocked him down and give himself relevancy. Again, it kind of seems like he was more of a payday for Mike Tyson and he's doing this. I'm a little bit disappointed he would go down to this level, but
same.
I'm not surprised if they probably
You'd
are going
to
offer
think,
him.
I'm above this fucking guy. I'm not doing this. But if he's doing
most
it,
people
I hope
are.
He wins.
Like, I know that they've been trying to get Canelo Alvarez to do it. And it's just like, you know, like, until they start fighting someone like Canelo Alvarez. Like,
if he does that, I'll watch. Or if he fights like Triple G. Or if he fights somebody real who's not 100 years old and hangs with them, I'll have to shut my mouth.
Because even Mayweather was like twice the guy's age at the time.
Yeah.
Like, Mayweather was in
That's
story,
what I'm saying.
So.
He was retired and done with this shit. And so if he fights someone who is still doing this, who is still a big name, who is like, and maybe they just aren't going to give him the time of day. And the one thing that you have to consider for those guys is what's the upside? If I go in and I beat Jake Paul, if I'm Triple G, if I'm Canelo Alvarez, if I, you know, and I go beat Jake Paul, everyone goes, yeah, you're one of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. Of course you did. And if by chance he beats me, I'm a joke. I just got smashed by
Tyron
Jake
Woodley.
Paul. Right. But at least Tyron, I understand what you're saying, but like, he's not a boxer. Like, at least you have that crutch to lean on. If boxing is what you do and you lose to Jake Paul, you're a joke. You're done. Your career's over. And so that's maybe, I don't totally rule out the possibility that Jake Paul's having a hard time getting the tip top guys to come do this. But I do think he's handpicked, like you said, washed up UFC guys and guys that had a name a while ago. And so, yeah, I wish Mike Tyson would have given this guy the Heisman and just said, get the hell out of here. But if he's going to do it, I fucking hope he does it. So I'm curious, man, will you watch this thing? I don't know if you'll have your Netflix account by then. You're a man of many links. You know how to find a show.
There's a difference between watching and paying, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, 100%. So will you pay or will you watch? Or neither?
It depends on the night and what I'm doing. I'm not going to go out of my way and make plans around it. If a couple buddies want to do it and there's nothing going on, I think it's in July.
It is.
July 8th. That
sounds right.
I'd have
we'll
to
see
come
what's on
at
Blues Fest that Saturday.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's no way I'm 100% not, or sorry, there's no way I'm going to make time for this I'm gonna.
Yeah, this isn't appointment viewing for you.
Yeah, if I'm doing something, I'll check it out. Definitely not paying for sure.
Okay.
To buy a Netflix account, I'll do that. I won't do that either. Like Making a Murderer can't even get me to do that right now, and I've watched that thing like 15 times. But no, it's something where I don't really have much appetite for these kind of things. I don't really care. Like I checked them out and I was like, yeah, I know what it is. I'm not feeling this anymore.
Yeah.
I find the differences in you know, when we could transition to this next too, but it's not like it's, you know, Francis Ngannou versus a real heavyweight boxer. Like it's like mm-hmm. you said, like I don't care about these Paul brothers and whatever, they're cool, they're funny, whatever their drinks. Like you said, I don't give a crap.
Yeah.
I look at them and I'm like, all right, who are they fighting and what are they fighting for and what's their upside? Well, Mike Tyson's one of the most legendary boxers. They get him in the like mm-hmm. the ring and fight with them, that's a win for them no matter what they yes. do. And if Mike Tyson knocks them out, well, they don't care because Mike Tyson's the baddest motherfucker on the planet. You know what I mean? Like it's that guy.
Sure.
But if he doesn't knock them out and like you said, they win, it's like, well, we just knocked out the baddest motherfucker ever. And Mike Tyson's saying, well, I just got paid, you know, $10 million to do jack shit and I haven't done anything in years. So you know what? I need the money. Let's do it. So it's kind of one of those situations where it's whatever, but it's not like, you know, the last fight I cared about was Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua. Or not Anthony Joshua,
Fury.
Tyson Fury. And that was the one where I was working and I was making sure I was watching it. I was at work.
Right.
And I'm like, I got to watch this. And I was watching
but that's
it.
The difference, right? Those are likable guys. And
that's the thing. I want to see fighters that actually want to fight each other. The Paul brothers, they're not fighting anybody relevant in boxing right now. Mike, you know, if you look at Francis Ngannou, the guy walked away from the UFC as the heavyweight champion of the world, signs with the PFL. I think he's got fights lined up there, but he's already fought the two biggest heavyweights in the world, basically, in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, the heavyweight champion of the world in Tyson Fury. And now Anthony Joshua, who's also been a heavyweight champion, right?
Yep.
Like he's fighting two of the biggest guys in his first two boxing fights ever.
Yep.
Yeah, the Paul brothers can't sign somebody for nothing. Give me a freaking break. They're picking exactly who they want to pick,
yep.
and that's the thing. So if Canelo wants to fight them, they'll fight. Canelo will fight them because I'm sure they'll take the money to beat the shit out of these guys. So they just want to fight guys that are in their division and want to focus on their careers right now, which is good. But the fact that you got two of the biggest heavyweights in the world fighting the biggest heavyweight in the world in terms of UFC, MMA, like, you know, other than John Jones, it's Francis Ngannou, even though he hasn't been in the division for a bit.
Yep.
It's the biggest heavyweight in the world is him. So, you know, when you see these guys making fights that don't mean anything but are getting paid a lot of money in Saudi Arabia tomorrow night, like that's, well, tomorrow afternoon, I don't even know when it's going to air, but tomorrow afternoon, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, that's a thing. So that's why I look at these fights and I think there's something behind it that I don't give a shit about, and it doesn't pass the smell test, and I don't really care. I'm going to go on a hope that Mike Tyson handles these situations, and he does kind of have a crazy moment where he knocks him out, but I'm not going to get my hopes up, and I'm not going to make it appointment viewing.
Fair enough. Before we get into the UFC, or before we take a break to grab another beer as well, let's talk about Francis Ngannou, who you just mentioned, is going to fight Anthony Joshua on Friday late afternoon, early evening.
11 a.m. Eastern time is when the
card starts. Yeah, so it'll be mid-afternoon, I guess, here.
I don't know, because last time this happened when he fought Tyson Fury, I think it was like a 1 o'clock in the afternoon start, but then they got concerts, they built a ring for it. Like it's in Saudi Arabia again, who pitched
trying
a crap ton of money on having these big events to put on a show. So I don't know when it'll start.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But it's sometime Friday midday, because as you said, it's in Saudi Arabia, so there's the time change to consider. This is the second one of Francis Ngannou's big fights that is taking place in Saudi Arabia. I'd prefer that not continue to be the case. We talked about that last time, just the kind of grossness that Saudi Arabia is trying to sports wash here a little bit. But you go where the money is. I certainly understand that. But it's his second fight. There are people who would tell you, and I am not anywhere near enough of an expert on boxing to tell you myself, but there are a lot of people who said Francis Ngannou showed far better against Fury than they expected him to. And now we're going to do it again against another former heavyweight champion, as you mentioned. I love Francis Ngannou. I love his story. I love everything about him. I love that he had the spine to walk out on Dana White when he didn't feel like he was being treated fairly. He is still a guy who never lost his heavyweight championship in the UFC. And so obviously the UFC is going to move on, but no one ever took that belt off of him. So, and now he's doing it in the boxing world. And so look, if that guy can go make his money, good for him. And if he's fighting these top guys, good for him. I'm curious what your interest level in this one is now that he's moved on to face Joshua, and what you expect out of this, whether you expect him to hang tough again, whether he could be outclassed here a little bit? Because there was some talk, the other thing about the Fury fight, was it maybe Fury? Yeah, but that maybe Fury hadn't taken it quite as seriously as he should have. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine Joshua's going to make the same mistake.
No, no. And that's the only problem I have for Francis Ngannou in this situation is that, one, he did beat Tyson Fury. He did.
Okay.
Like, everybody can,
I'll take your word for that.
No, it sucked. It sucked that he, you know, when you cut a guy and you knock him down and then you lose the fight when the other guy didn't really do much to you. I get why he won and boxed. Like, he's got a heavyweight championship to defend against.
The boxing world was going to protect Fury in that moment.
Exactly. Anthony Joshua now looks at the situation like, holy shit, this guy can bang.
Yeah.
So I got to make sure
I'm
safe.
Get ready.
Exactly. So if I'm Francis Ngannou, though, I know that.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and he's still a bad man that can throw a mean punch. So,
100%.
You know, the one thing about boxing is, and UFC, everything, it's a puncher's fight, right? And that's what it is. And for Anthony Joshua, like, he hasn't been as great lately. Like, he's not Tyson Fury, who's the heavyweight champion of the world, and everyone knows, like, everyone knows Anthony Joshua. He's one of the top, you know, heavyweight fighters. But this is going to be a big fight for the both of them, because I do know for Francis Ngannou, he's starting to try and want to get back to the MMA world, but also in his PFL, and he wants to start fighting in against the Bellator guys and start fighting for championships in that sense. But this is a big deal for him because he's talked about wanting to stay in boxing too.
Oh, the money he's making against these fuckers compared to what he's going to make back in MMA.
Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. So I think for him, though, and, you know, pride. Like, he's, like you said, he's never lost his belt. He's one of the baddest heavyweights in the world.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bit older and his body's a bit worn down. So he's only going to have so many of these left. So, you know, and I'm sure he learned a lot, right? That his first boxing fight ever
was
against the damn heavyweight champion. And he, like I said, he beat him.
Yeah.
He looked good. And maybe he didn't take it as serious, whatever. But that's where the thing is now. Anthony Joshua, it's going to be a fun fight to watch. I do have interest. I'm going to be watching it.
Well, it's interesting, right? Just to pause on that for a second. Like, we talked a bunch of times about Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. And it was pretty clear at some point, like good for Conor. He didn't look terrible, but Floyd was kind of playing with his food a little bit, right? Like, he was making it last and this and that. That's not what happened with Fury and Ngannou.
No.
And so this story that, you know, even your best mixed martial artists can't box with top boxers, that was believable on the Conor thing. Mm-hmm. That's not believable now. And because Fury, in theory, clearly thought he could walk in and toy with Ngannou a little bit. I'll be fine. I don't have to take it that seriously. My eyes are on my title defense. Mm-hmm. And Ngannou made him look silly a couple of times and made him pay for that. And so this idea of toying with Francis Ngannou, that's gone. And so, yeah, I'm intrigued to see, A, as you suggest, Ngannou will adjust, right? I learned a lot having just fought the heavyweight champ of the world in boxing. And Joshua will have taken this more seriously coming in. I'm not a boxing guy like I am a UFC guy. I'm interested in this, though. Like,
yeah, are you going to watch tomorrow night?
Well, that depends if you can find me a link or not. I probably won't pay for
it. Come on. You know I got you. You know I got you.
I'm not going to pay for boxing. I just don't. But yeah, if you can hook me
up. Time of the day would be nice to know.
I would like to know that, yeah.
Because it might be around dinner time. Might be around 4. I don't know what time
it is. Final minutes of the NHL trade deadline, man. There could be a lot going on.
Exactly. Leafs are bringing in Sidney Crosby and you can't pay attention. Who knows, right? But yeah, no, I'm very interested. I'm glad you are too, because like I said, these are fights that are rare too. Like, heavyweights are always the baddest, right?
And, yeah.
Like, those are the most fun to watch. Everybody wants to pay to see the heavyweights, right? That's your money division.
Especially in boxing.
The UFC and Jon Jones has really fucked that up the last year or so, 2 years.
But like, the UFC's had a long time where their heavyweight division hasn't been as compelling
as
the welterweight division or the middle or some of the lightweight stuff that was going on, right?
It's been a few years, absolutely.
But heavyweight boxing champion, and we've come up so long with that. Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson, Muhammad, like, through the generations, the heavyweights were where it was at. Those were the biggest names. And boxing kind of went off a cliff for a while in terms of its media coverage. Mm-hmm. But now we're back in a world where these are heavyweights and those are the biggest names again. And there's just something about a heavyweight bout in boxing that even if you're not a big boxing guy, still gets people to gather around. It's one of those things that, you know, you throw someone hosts a party and has 12 or 15 people over to watch the thing. And it's kind of cool to see we're back in that place. And that Francis Ngannou, as a former mixed martial artist who literally built himself up from nothing, is now a part of that.
Yeah. And the one good thing that he's done, though, is leave the UFC in the spot where he did to make the money. Because, again, we're sitting here waiting to see John Jones versus Stipe Miocic, which I don't have much appetite for. I don't. Stipe hasn't fought in like 5 years now since he got knocked out by Ngannou.
When is that fight?
Well, that's the thing. Like, they were supposed to be 300, but then Stipe didn't want to fight anybody. Like, again, we have guys like Tom Aspinall sitting there waiting for a title shot for this long. He's going to have to take like a non, like, it just, the heavyweight division in the UFC is sitting around waiting. Stalled. Right now, since Francis has left, because here comes John Jones and he doesn't want to fight anybody other than Stipe. Like, he's not fighting Popovich, he's not fighting anybody, he doesn't want to fight Aspinall. Like, there's heavyweights, like, there's a big fight this weekend in the heavyweight division that we're going to see, and it's going to put another guy probably in that position.
Into the mix,
into the mix. Plus, there's another heavyweight on the card that's, you know, going to be coming screaming up the division very soon that I'm going to talk to you about. There's a lot in the heavyweight division, but right now we're not seeing any of the best guys fight each other because we're waiting on two guys that are, one guy doesn't care about fighting anybody except for a washed up guy, just a legendary fight. But sure, again, Stipe hasn't fought in forever, and this guy's old. It's like, okay, what are you really waiting for? So when you have a chance, like Francis Ngannou is doing right now, to bet on himself and go make this Saudi money and, again, fight the best boxers in the world, with whether it be Tyson Fury and now, again, Anthony Joshua, one of the, you know, former heavyweight champion, a guy that's well known in the boxing world, like you said, this is good for boxing because it's going to add eyes to it. It's going to sell some money. It's going to make some take. It's big.
Yeah, it's big.
And I think it's great. And I think I'm happy for Francis to get these paydays and not be a slouch. I'm cheering for him for sure. And I just want to see him do good because I think that the UFC did him wrong. He should have fought John Jones, not Ciryl Gane. Like, that was just a waste of everyone's time. And now he doesn't want to fight anybody else, John Jones. So it should have been Francis Ngannou, and he should have put John Jones away and whatever. I mean, that's only, I hope. I like to hate on John Jones.
I'm getting that.
Yeah. But just this guy is just such a, he calls out Tom. I don't know. I can get into more rants, Matty, but I'm just so over John Jones. And I just think that the UFC and Dana White have put themselves in the heavyweight division, their money division that's been struggling for years, in such a shitty spot right now. And I'm so happy to see Francis Ngannou getting paid to fight these big-time boxers. And one, not just do it to just do it. This guy's going out there to win and try to kill these guys. And I love that. Like I said, knocking down Tyson Fury, getting in his face, yelling at him. Man, I want that poster on my wall. I love that feeling. I love that emotion from him.
Well, wasn't there a moment in that fight, or I think Fury yells at him, time to go to school or whatever, and Francis yells back at him afterwards after he knocks him down, like, you're a terrible fucking teacher or something.
And
like that
was the thing, and I
hilarious
love that.
Man,
exactly. And that's my point, is like, and for Anthony Joshua, like, I'm sure he's well aware of now his skills. He's got a little bit of tape on Francis Ngannou and what he wants to do. For Francis, you know, you got to learn too, you got to get better, you got to do things you were, you know, not doing against Tyson Fury. The reason, you know, there's a lot to check out here, but it is something I'm excited to see and see how it plays out.
Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll go grab another pint, and we'll come back. We'll get into UFC 299 and everything else floating around, as we are also just a month away now from UFC 300. So there's certainly been some news there as well. So stick around. We'll be back to deal with that in just a sec. Let's get back into it here. We'll talk a little UFC 299 on the heels of some new pints here. What'd you go with here on round two?
Well, thanks, Angela. Once again, I love you. But I have a Lake of Bays Starboard New England IPA, 5.4%. I like the can. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of bluish green, but sailboats on it, and there's a nice light tower on it, some cool stuff. So I'm going to give that one a whirl. What do you got going on, fella?
Well, this is the one you brought for me here today. You're always good enough to come with pints when you arrive to the studio. And this is a light lager, extra tall. Like that, man. This is super tall can audio today. Where did you say this was from? Great Lake?
Muskoka.
Muskoka, that's right. I have had this one a time before or two before. I do like it, man. Like, on a night where you're just kind of hoping to cruise a little bit, this gives you plenty to sip on without crushable is exactly the right word. Without fucking you up too bad. Right?
Yeah.
So I do like this one. Appreciate you bringing that one by.
Matt, you give me beers every time I'm here.
Well, just
actually,
not
I
this
start
time.
Doing this to Angela.
Yeah,
now.
Honestly, I didn't give you shit this time. Angela's the one who hooked you up. So
it's true.
And last time, I think
it's been the last two or three times.
Yeah, yeah, because I think the last time you
Since
were in
Christmas.
Here was mid-January anyway, and she had dropped off some, you know, some Christmas beers for us.
So,
you don't owe me shit. You might owe Angela a pint or two, but you don't owe anything to me at this point. So, UFC 299 goes this weekend. Topped off, main evented by your boy, Sugar Sean O'Malley. Maybe we don't have to start there. It is an interesting card, and the betting lines have been moving around quite a bit on this one. Yeah. So maybe to me, in that regard, the most interesting fight is the co-main.
Yeah.
Which has Dustin Poirier, to me, getting disrespected a little bit here, right? Like, when you look at what he's done and the guys that he's fought and, like, the things that are on his resume, and he's sort of in a position now where he doesn't fight unless he wants to fight, right? If he thinks it's something that fans will get excited about, he'll get in on it. He's not, I wouldn't say semi-retired or whatever, but he's just kind of, he's at a point in his career where if it makes sense, he'll do it. If it doesn't, he doesn't. But he's a dog here in the co-main event, man. What do you make of it?
Yeah, interesting. The one thing it tells me a lot more is that the UFC is pretty high on this Benoit Saint-Preux.
Saint-Denis. Yeah. Former member of the French Special Service or Special Forces. Like, yeah. This guy's no joke.
No, and he's only got the one loss. People. He's 13-1, and he's a guy that's had. He's coming off a couple of knockout wins, and the thing I look
he's won 15 in a row or something.
Well, he's 13-1.
13-1. So yeah. Okay. So no. Yeah.
So he's someone that I think, not that he's fought in anybody huge and not anybody light, but I look at it as Dustin Poirier is coming off of that knockout, ugly knockout loss to Justin Gaethje, where. Again, Matt, how many times have we been on this pod that we've lately where we've talked? The one thing I always get concerned about is these fighters, you know, mid to late 30s getting knocked out and for the first, like an ugly knockout.
That's a good point, Matt.
It's always a tough fight after, right? Yeah. It's you second guess yourself. You realize your speed, your timing is just a little bit off.
Yeah.
You're a little bit more nervous. Look what happened to Volkanovski.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Look what happened earlier as well. Like it keeps happening.
Well, Kamaru Usman's never been the same.
Exactly. Yeah. So I look at it, it's like, okay, is that what's going on here? But then I look at, you know, St. Denis, and I'm like, okay, this guy is pretty. I look at the, you know, the fights he's had, and, you know, he's coming off of a nice knockout loss against Matt Frivola. Tego Moses was a knockout loss as well last year. He had two knockout wins in the first round against Frivola, one against Moses in the second round. But then, you know, he's a sub win, another knockout win. He had three wins last year alone, so he's ready to go.
But they're just guys, right? These are the guys he's beating are just guys. And so, look, you can only beat who they put in front of you.
Yeah.
So power to him for getting it done. Dustin Poirier has been fighting Gaethje's and Conor McGregor's, right? And like the beasts in the he's been in there and he's been doing it. And I it's surprising to me that he's the underdog in this thing.
But you look at the last couple fights that even Poirier's had, and you know, he's had back-to-back wins against McGregor.
Yeah.
A loss to Charles Oliveira. He got subbed in the third round.
That's true.
But he beat Michael Chandler, who I think that Michael Chandler had him, and Michael Chandler's just own stupidity in the octagon.
You've talked
and
about that, man. Fight smarts that he doesn't have.
Fight IQ is just pathetic because he had him against, and Poirier said it after. Yeah, he had me seeing stars, and he just went for a level change. What the fuck are you doing? Like, Michael Chandler, but then lost to Gaethje in an ugly loss. So he's been finished in his last, he's had finishes in his last couple fights, but again, he hasn't really beaten anyone where I'm like, okay, like this guy's really, really good. Like,
but you would admit he's in a far different class of who he's 100%. Been fighting than Benoit.
Dustin Poirier is one of my favorite fighters to watch. Just the respect, how much everybody loves him. But again, now I think he's in that spot where he hasn't had a real tough fight where he's shown that he is the old Dustin Poirier again, because it's been a few years since we've seen him have his way. Like, you know, the Dan Hooker fight was in 2020, where that's one of the best fights I've ever watched.
Yeah.
You know, the pair of fights against Conor McGregor. Okay. But you know, we haven't seen him since
his own leg. Like, that wasn't necessarily Poirier finishing him.
So. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's tough. And, you know, the Dan Hooker fight is one of the best fights ever. And those two, and again, that's been a couple years. So I'm curious. I feel like I'm shitting on and Dustin Poirier, and I hate it right now. But I look at this as a very interesting fight.
So
and
do you think the line is correct to be favoring Benoit Saint-Denis?
I don't.
No?
I would give the respect factor to Dustin Poirier because I love the diamond.
Yeah.
I would put this as a pick'em.
Okay.
I would put this as an even fight. But it's
and
telling
this,
me
this one's moved a lot, right? A lot, like this started with Dustin as the favorite.
Well, he's a plus 180 here. So he's a big dog.
Yeah, but he wasn't. Like when the line opened, he was the favorite. And for whatever reason, it's moved and moved and moved.
Yeah.
So that often means something, right? Sometimes people in Vegas know shit we don't know, right? Whether there's an injury, whether there's something going on there, or they just move to take your money, right? Obviously is the biggest part of it, but
friggin' Vegas.
Yeah. I threw I threw a couple bucks on Dustin Poirier a couple days ago.
I might
too. Because I think he's being disrespected with this line, and I think he could get it done. I think Benoit Saint-Denis is on the come, and I think there's a good chance that he's going to be very good if he isn't already. But this is a step up, and Poirier's been through some shit that Saint-Denis hasn't seen yet.
And that's where I want to see it, because I know that come the third round that Dustin Poirier is the guy that's going to be standing there ready to go to war.
And this is a five-round fight. Co-main, yeah. Right? So Poirier's been through that. Saint-Denis hasn't seen anything like that. So.
And that's the thing. Saint-Denis is 28 years old. They're both southpaws. He's got a one-inch reach.
Yeah.
He's got 2 inches in height. But, like, these guys are pretty – this is a good fight.
And
that's,
I agree.
I think that I don't want to – there's a lot of fights on here that I'm going to say I think could be fight of the night. I want to say this is obviously one to watch, but that's like, yeah, dude, like, you could pick five of them. They're all ready to – this is the fight to watch. But
right.
This is one where – I'm nervous for it, because if Benoit Saint-Denis shows up and he just knocks out Dustin Poirier, it's like, oh shit, now what's happening to Dustin? Like, he's one of these legends that you don't want, like, you know, I don't want to see him like that, but again, yeah. I want to see him get back to the way he is. I'm curious to see what happens. I still think Dustin Poirier wins this fight in the third round. I think it goes to decision, though. I think that this one is...
Well, then it's going to have to go five. Like I said, co-main event, this is a five-round fight.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I still think that favors Poirier. Now, your point sure. that he's been he was knocked out pretty bad last time, and that sometimes that's a tough thing to come back from. But I just think Poirier has more experience in these sorts of big moments, fights that go a little longer than Benoit Saint-Denis. I'm still with you, though. I think it could go five rounds to the judges. I don't know that I expect anybody to get finished in this fight.
Mm-hmm.
Third from the top, we got MVP. New guy on the scene, and you'll dig me out here, because I can't remember off the top of my head. My notes app is closed here. His
Kevin
opponent.
Holland.
Kevin Holland, who is a very interesting fighter, kind of tall, kind of lanky, but we got a newcomer here that he's facing off with here. What do you make of it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I want to see it. I'm always hesitant to, as Michael Chandler, and it's anybody coming from Bellator, PFL, like these guys that they bring in that they're hyped up on. MVP, Michael Venom Page, 21-2. He's 36 years old, though. He's
yeah.
not a young guy. Kevin Holland is a very good fight for this, too, because Kevin Holland's a very unpredictable fighter. He's a guy that I like watching. He's entertaining, and he's someone that is very basic, but he's very well-rounded.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a guy that's going to surprise you with punches and, you know, get you in a spot. He's a guy that's just going to punch you in the fucking face, and he's going to beat you up, and he's going to hit you with leg kicks. He's, like I said, he's 5 years younger. He's got 2 inches reach on him. I'm curious to see if he gets taken down or how Michael Page. Like, I got to be honest with you. I haven't watched a lot of Michael Venom Pages, and this is a guy that's coming off a loss in 2022, and he only fought once last year.
Didn't he finish that fight with like a knee to the face? Didn't he like KO somebody in a pretty gruesome way?
Yeah, Yamaguchi, I think.
Yeah,
knockout in the first round, 20 seconds in,
and he two or three fights before that, I think he shattered somebody's knee with a kick. Like, this is a dangerous dude. Like,
yeah, nothing against him.
No.
I'm just going to hate on him until I see him do something. I like, seriously, I have nothing
Show
against
him. Show me something in the big leagues.
Yeah, and he's a very decorated fighter. He's someone that has...
But you're right. Like, a lot of these guys struggle to come in. Michael Chandler is an exception to the rule, right? Who came in and didn't miss it. Well, you're right. I know you're not a fan, but he hasn't looked out of place in the UFC, right? Like,
yeah, but he's lost himself W's and chances at belts. And
yeah,
he's
a
guy.
But with his fight IQ, not with his skill,
sure.
right? Not with his. So we'll see what this guy can do. And it's an interesting. Like, Kevin Holland is no joke. Like,
no.
he's. I don't think you'd quite yet throw the label of gatekeeper on him. Like, he's not right there looking, you know, in the mix for a title shot. But he's not too far down the list here either. I think this is an interesting one. Two guys probably, you know, where you'd want to see a guy like Venom come in and have to start with Kevin Holland. I think that's a reasonable entry to the UFC.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I think this is a great fight. I've watched only a couple highlights of Michael Venom Page. He looks like a guy that has he brings a lot to the fighting table.
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, my only problem is I look at his record and I don't know any of the fighters he's fucking fought.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. I don't give a shit whose eyes he's broken and legs and, you know, I respect him. I respect him as a fighter. But, you know, when you're not fighting the best in the world like you are in the UFC, it's a lot different.
Sure.
And so that's my thing is I look at this as if he can come in and he can knock out a guy like Kevin Holland, mm-hmm. well, then I know this guy's for real.
He's for real.
Yeah, because Kevin Holland's a guy that's, like I said, he's an orthodox fighter, but, you know, the switch stance from Michael Page, I'm curious to see. And that's the thing where I look at the last fight, Dustin Poirier versus Benoit St. Denis. These guys are both southpaws.
Yep.
So these guys are both going to want to counterpunch and figure things out and whatever. So when I get to Michael Venom Page, how is he in the octagon in the UFC in front of, you know, it's going to be quite a crowd.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be a nothing crowd. This is in Miami. It's going to be sold out.
It'll be legit. I mean,
yeah. Like, this is going to be a serious
President
crowd. So
Trump, no doubt, in the house.
Oh, absolutely.
Just
in Florida.
Miles from Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's going to be talking about the love them. They're going to have the grand entrance with Kid Rock, probably.
Kid Rock and Tucker Carlson.
Yeah,
the
Dana
world's
White.
Worst NWO entrance.
Yeah. honestly, just one of the worst. But there's going to be so much love, and every fighter's going to be dedicating their fight to Donnie. Because of all the things he's always, I don't think you could turn on the TV without seeing him in a lawsuit or something. I am curious to see Michael Venom Page. I want to see him. Yeah. I want to see him. The one thing I'm happy about is we just talked about the respect factor. I'm happy that in this fight, Kevin Holland is the favorite. So MVP is the underdog.
And he should be.
100%. That's where I want to see that stuff. But Kevin Holland is a guy that you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a guy that can, you know, throw his leg, throw his feet. He's going to, you know, he's going to throw you up against the cage if he needs to.
Yeah.
I want to see how Michael Venom Page handles this guy, because this is a different breed of fighter. He's a guy that's, you know, Kevin Holland's gone up and down in the weight classes. He's a guy that's well-rounded, and he's no slouch. So he might be 25-10 in his record, but again, he's got, you know, 2-inch reach, and he's got he's 1-inch taller. But again, this is going to be fun. I think it's going to be fun. 100%. I want to see. I like a lot of his fighting style, Michael Venom Page. Again, I need to see him. I just want to see him fight, and I'm going to wait and see, and I'm going to go with Kevin Holland winning this fight.
Fourth from the top, Gilbert Duranio Burns back in the octagon for the first time in, I think it's been like a year. It's been a minute since he fought again.
Just under a year, May 2023, he lost to Bilal Muhammad.
Right. Remember the name. So I'm curious, you know, it's been a while. He's getting up there a little bit too in age. But, you know, I always enjoy watching him fight. He'll be fourth from the top here. So he's sort of moved down the card a little bit, right? Like he's kind of... You wouldn't rule it out completely, but his days of contending for a championship are on hold, if not over. Mm-hmm. But he's moved down a little bit. What are you expecting out of him in his fight?
I love this New England IPA.
Yeah? It's treating you well, eh?
Oh, it's got a lot of flavor. I like that. That's a good taste. Oh, man, nice and fruity. I love that. Thank you again, Angela. Interesting fight, right? And Gilbert Burns is coming off shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
And... again, a guy that's a little bit older. So it's a very tough fight. I don't like when we see these 37-year-old versus 27-year-old or 28-year-old in the Dustin Poirier versus St. Denis versus a 35-year-old. Like, those are the ones where you're setting up. It's gatekeeper stuff.
It is.
And that's exactly what this is here. For Gilbert Burns, he's sitting there where he's a great name. He's tough as nails, and he's a great guy to watch in the octagon. He's fun. He's well-rounded. Jack Della Maddalena, like, this is a guy that's been a prospect.
Free name Jack.
Yeah. And he's a guy that they were really high on when he came into the UFC.
Again, he's won a ton, but against not a lot of
coming off a
names.
Win against Kevin Holland and a decision win. So
well,
I'll give
something.
Him,
that's something.
It's absolutely something. And this guy hasn't lost.
But again, similar to that Poirier fight that we talked about, Burns has been fighting at a different level. The guy Burns has been fighting over the last 5 years is very different than what three name Jack's been fighting, other than that Holland.
100%.
Fight, which is legit.
And Jack Della Maddalena, like, this guy's in loss since 2016. He has back-to-back losses. And his first two fights in MMA, it wasn't the UFC, but his first two fights were losses. And then he just went on a tear, and this guy's won, you know, 16 in a row.
Right.
So this is a bit, and again, the most recent one against Kevin Holland, a guy that I just talked up. So I think that he's going to win this fight. I think he's just such a well-rounded prospect. He's from Australia, so people are going to love him on the mic. He's fun. He's scrappy. He's a guy that I'm curious to see takes advantage of a Gilbert Burns, who has been on the IR getting shoulder surgery, hasn't really fought in over almost a year. Like you said, it's been quite a while since May 2023. So, and he lost to Bilal Muhammad.
Yeah.
So, and listen, Bilal Muhammad is a guy that he's been waiting around for a title shot, which feels like for 2 years now for Bilal Muhammad. So, but again, Gilbert Burns, like, beating Jorge Masvidal, Neil Magny, lost to Hazmat Chimaev, you know, beating Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, that's 2021. Not to crap on him, but again, Masvidal and Neil Magny aren't wins I'm really excited about.
Right.
And those are his two wins last year.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and his loss to Chimaev is in 2022. His win against
at that point, everyone was losing to Chimaev, right?
So. And that's the thing. And that was a great fight. The one thing that he showed in this is that this guy is tough as fuck because he didn't get knocked out. He didn't get finished. He went the distance against Chimaev, which is huge.
100%.
But again, his win against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, that's 2021. Like, that's been a minute. So. Yeah. And like I said, he's coming off of a long kind of surgery and not being in the octagon. Nervous. I'm nervous. I don't think he's going to get knocked out. I think this goes the distance, but I think Jack Della Maddalena is going to be all over Gilbert Burns, but I don't think he's going to be able to finish him because this guy just doesn't want to be finished. Gilbert Burns is very tough.
100%.
I love Durinho. I love, like you said, watching him in the octagon. He's always a great fight, but again, nervous of the 10-year gap here, and Maddalena is a guy that...
They do this sometimes. Like you said, it's not the same quite as gatekeeping, but it is sort of that, like, where you're 10 years younger, you're like, okay, you've beaten some guys, you're out there, let's see how you do against Gilbert Burns. But you've almost when Gilbert Burns is 37 years old, you're almost putting your thumb on the scale a little bit, right, in terms of, like, we want to see if you're ready to take this step. If Gilbert beats you, then great, we know you aren't ready to move up to that level. But Burns, instead of being given another kind of big fight, and maybe he shouldn't have been, like you've pointed out, he's got some losses here, but he's almost being thrown to the wolves a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we think this is the next up-and-coming guy, and we're going to sacrifice you to do it. The main event is your boy.
In that fight, too, if there's a couple other ones that are big ones.
Well,
here,
I was just going to say, but do you want to get to the main event, which is your boy Sugar Sean, or you got a couple other fights here on this card you'd rather?
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Okay.
But even on the main card. But the one thing I want to point out is Gilbert Burns right now is the fourth-ranked welterweight in the world.
Yeah.
Jack Della Maddalena is sitting there at 11. And we just saw...
It's tough, man.
Yeah, it's tough. And we just saw that, you know, the welterweight division is very interesting right now because it's for a while it hasn't shown much. But Bilal Muhammad's been sitting there waiting anxiously for a friggin' title shot.
Yeah.
You also have Shavkat Rakhmonov, who is a guy that was almost offered the main event at 300.
Right.
But nobody wants to
fight him.
He's undefeated, and he's been really good. You have Colby Covington, who's sitting there waiting to fight, I don't know who, but Ian Machado Gary. Ian Machado Gary sitting right there and called him out. He's sitting there. Those are the 5 and 6 ranked welterweights. So, you know, when you have a guy like Jack Della Maddalena, and if he can kind of knock out or have a great fight against Gilbert Burns, he's instantly going to jump into the top five. Like, that's the guy that's in the top five. And all of a sudden, you have a welterweight division with about four guys, a couple of undefeated guys, and guys that have, like, again, Jack Della Maddalena has two losses to his name, none in the UFC, and none since 2016. So you're going to have an undefeated Ian Machado Gary.
Do you think he moves up that high with a win? Like, he doesn't jump to six or seven?
When you beat the number four, how do you not take
you
over
just,
that?
You think he just grabs that spot? He's the four.
I think what would happen in that sense is things are going to have to shift quite a bit because
there's going to have to be a couple of
Gilbert Burns is going to drop quite a bit, but I think that I don't see Colby moving into the number four spot to take over. And I don't see Ian Machado Gary just jumping in there. So I think you're going to move some guys around a little bit here. Sean Brady's a guy, too, that a couple years ago was undefeated. He has one loss. And next thing you know, he's already kind of just not a nobody. But, you know,
the welterweight's really interesting because Kamaru just cleaned it all out. And now that he's, you know, he's had a couple runs at Leon, didn't get it done. And so it's kind of given fresh life to a lot of those guys who didn't deserve another shot at Usman, but now get a shot at Leon. So we'll see how that's
going. I just remember going back a couple years, like, what, it was a year ago, it felt like that. We're like, all right, well, who is Kamaru Usman fighting?
Because,
you know, it was right before he fought Leon, and it was just like, what's he doing? Who's he going to fight?
He's beating everybody.
Yeah. And it was like, Leon finally made sense. And so we're looking at the welterweight division. It's one of the stacked divisions right now. And especially if Jack Della Maddalena can take out, you know, Gilbert Burns, who's in the top five right now, it gives him a good eye. Like, it gives him, you know, it puts him on the map of a guy that deserves a top five or, you know, top eight fight. And I think he's either going to have to fight a guy like a Colby Covington or, you know, an Ian Machado Gary, or Neil Magny, whatever it is. He's going to have to fight these, you know, 5, 6, 7s to get back in there even higher up. But I think that it's going to be, you know, if he loses or goes the distance and it's a boring fight, he doesn't do much, then I don't see him moving up very much. I just see Gilbert Burns dropping quite a bit. So there's a lot that could happen. Yeah. This is a fight that has a lot of implications. I'm excited to see it. I'm going to take Jack Della Maddalena to win this fight.
Okay.
So, and I think it goes the distance.
Before we get to the main event, then, why don't you kind
of... Well, the fight of the night,
lightning round here. Why don't you hit us with a couple other fights you got an eye on here.
The first night of the pay-per-view, the first fight for the pay-per-view, Peter Yan versus Song Yadong. This is one that
That's
everywhere...
That's going to be a war.
Yeah, I've looked everywhere, and everybody says this is fight of the night. Like, this is fight of the night, because Peter Yan is a guy that, man, he's been fighting some big dogs, and he's off three straight losses, but again, you
look
go back...
Look at the names.
Yeah, like, lost to Sterling, and again, that was a DQ, but he was beating Sterling.
Yes, he
was. And that was the knee to the head when he was on the ground.
Yep.
That was a win.
Stupid decision, or stupid thing to do, but he had that fight under control.
And he has nobody to blame but himself in the corner, because he asked his corner, can I knee him? And
they
said yes.
They said yes.
Knee the guy in the head, disqualified, lost the belt, and then he's never been the same since. Well, you know what? That's a lie. He did have a war against Corey Sandhagen.
Yep.
He won that fight to kind of put him back in the spot. Got the rematch against Aljamain Sterling, lost that. Lost to Sean O'Malley, which everyone says is controversial, but really he got outstruck by 50 major strikes, so not surprised.
With O'Malley on the come,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then you got lost to Marab, who's beating everyone right now, and he's also a guy you could argue deserves the title shot. So this is three straight losses where, all right, you know, he's already said, I kind of want to be out of the UFC if I don't win my next fight, whatever it is. And Song Yadong is a no-joke guy right now where he can kind of throw him. This is kind of two guys that are looking to kind of put their name somewhere and do what they can to stick in the division. So Song Yadong versus Piotr Yan. I know we call him Peter, but I think he's got to go by Piotr or something.
Piotr Yan, I believe. Yeah.
Whatever.
We don't know. We're North American.
No. So I think this is a fight that has a lot of implications too for both guys. Yan wants to get back into that top division. He wants to kind of make a name for himself again, or he's just going to disappear. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen here, but I like this fight a lot. I do. I think it's going to be exciting. Yan's the number four ranked here right now. Song Yadong sitting at number seven. He wants to get into the top five and put himself in there with, you know, I don't know who else in that division right now. Divison Figueiredo wants to be in there, but I can't wait to see him fight Cody Garbrandt at 300. That's going to be such a sick fight. Holy shit. But I'm curious to see what Yan has here now, because if he doesn't and he loses this fight, what's next for him? Like, he's falling. He's dropping quickly.
Yep.
He's hanging on by a thread to the top five.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is something. But
and a guy that was fighting for titles like a year and a half ago, a little more than that, I guess. But
yeah,
he's hanging on now. He's been through some shit, and that division has seen some flux. So, yeah, I think that's going to be an incredible fight. But
yeah. I'm going to go with Yan winning this fight, because I think that this is one where I don't want to say he's desperate, but he needs a win.
Yeah.
And I think that I've always liked Yan's fighting style.
Yeah.
He's a great job of mixing things up, whether it be wrestling, striking, takedowns. He's just such a good, well-rounded fighter, an exciting fighter to watch. So nothing against Song Yadong here, but I'm going to take Peter Yan. I think he gets a knockout in the second round.
I'm going to go with some here, I think.
Yeah.
I think I like that. Main event, though. Let's get to the main event, man.
Sure.
We're chomping at the bit here, because this is your boy. You've been talking about this guy since he was nobody. Like, he hadn't yet established himself. You've been talking about this guy's personality. You've been talking about this guy and the potential that he had as a main eventer in the future. And we have arrived in the future. He is a champion now. He is fighting Chito Vera. We've seen that fight once before. It was before Sean O'Malley had sort of fully discovered who he was and got on the run that he would go on. But this is a guy that has a win over Sean O'Malley. Do you see any path at all for Chito getting another one? Or is this another chance for Sean O'Malley to really establish himself and show that he is one of those, you know, tent post champions in the UFC that they can build a division around?
Yeah, and this is an exciting one, and I'm kind of surprised that the War of the Words hasn't been all week, and we're not seeing headlines and these guys hating it. Like, they don't like
each
other.
We did hear that we're going to get the pink tights.
Yeah, we did. I saw them, the pink and gold tights.
As a Bret Hart guy, I'm down with that. I like that a lot.
Well, and he's got the pink hair. He's got the pink Lambo. Yeah. Like, this is the guy. Like, and the one thing about Sean O'Malley, too, is he's always been a show guy, and that's the one thing. You know, I've been talking about him since I saw him with the knockout, crazy knockout, walk-away knockout win when you have Snoop Dogg going, O'Malley, like, and that was crazy, and that was on Dana White's Contender Series.
Yeah, that was years ago.
It was years ago, and then what's he done since then? He's had some walk-off knockouts, he's had some crazy wins, But again, he has that loss to Marlon Vera, which isn't a total loss because he he broke his foot on a leg kick and he wasn't really able to walk around. But he was beating and touching up Chito Vera before. He had kind of control of the fight, but then again, he couldn't move. He couldn't put any pressure on that fight, on that one foot. He ended up getting taken down to the ground. You know what, TKO, whatever it is, over, kind of ground and pound. It was over.
Yeah.
Chito Vera got the W, and that's it. That's it. And now it's fueled Sean O'Malley since then to kind of go on a bit of a tear. And since then, he has already since that loss. He has 1, 2, 3, 4 knockout wins. The one against Aljamain does kind of bother me a little bit. It was a bit too soon. Aljamain was kind of trying to get up and defend himself, but you know what?
No, you're right.
Nothing against defending. I'm not a Chito guy, but I'm a huge O'Malley guy. I want to see him get this win, but it's going to be different. And the one thing that was, we've seen different from him is Sean O'Malley, since that fight, he knew. And I think that's the thing. Chito Vera exposed him as a guy that has small legs, that if you can get him in the right spots, you know, he's such a quick twitch fighter. Like, you'll see it. Every time O'Malley's in the octagon, he's constantly throwing fakes. He's getting you the hip thrust. He's giving you the food, and he's moving. He's adjusting. He's a switch fighter. He kind of switches his stances.
Right.
He's always on his feet, and he's always moving, and that's his bread and butter. If you could beat up those legs, and we saw one leg kick or a couple leg kicks already messed up his foot, and it kind of broke that one foot, then he wasn't able to move. And what happened? He was a walking duck.
Well, next thing you're a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest.
Exactly. So this is a guy that needs to have that. You know, we've seen since then that, you know, guys like Almeida and, you know, Chris Moutinho is whatever, but Pedro Munhoz, even Peter Yan, you thought Peter Yan would be a guy that would want to take him down and use leg kicks. You know, one thing we've seen from O'Malley, I'm going to say the same thing we saw from Aljamain Sterling. You know, Aljamain Sterling got beat by Peter Yan, but won the championship. And he came back and he fought him and he beat the hell out of him and made sure that he was the champion. So I had a lot of respect for Aljamain to kind of come back through this and defend his title.
Do it again.
So for Sean O'Malley, he has no reason to be. Chito Vera does not deserve a title shot. This isn't avenging his loss.
They have built this main event around that story. It's not that Chito Vera has been banging down the door deserving a championship fight. It's that Sean O'Malley has this one skeleton in his closet, right? This one villain in his past. Mm-hmm. We're going to build it up and you can sell a fight that way. Like, there's a million ways to market a fight. And so here's the one guy that Sean O'Malley has a loss to, that hasn't been able to get it done against, and we're going to line him up there for a title fight. I think you can sell a card that way.
No, and that's the thing. I'm down. I think that this is going to be the biggest selling card of the year. I think it's going to outsell 300 because I think 300... O'Malley, this is his first headlining a UFC card event. This is his fight. And the UFC...
And you mentioned that last time. They wanted to see, sell a card?
And this is the thing. Yeah. I think he's the star of the UFC right now. There's nobody other than Jon Jones that I think could sell out a card and bring in the pay-per-view buys. Unlike a guy like O'Malley, this is a guy that has his Twitch. Like, we talk about the Paul brothers, he's got his Twitch streams, he's got his, you know, his sponsorships, his real palm. He's smoking weed on his back porch, looking at his beautiful, like, this guy's got a mansion, he's got a pink Lambo. Like, this is a guy that makes and brings in a lot of money, and he does a lot for the UFC. Now that he's the champion, this is his first real test to sell a card. Hey, now you still got Dustin Poirier as the co-main, who himself has already headlined enough cards and is a sellout right guy. But this is O'Malley's kind of prime now. And for Chito Vera, this is a big fight for him because he doesn't deserve a title shot, but he's getting one, and that's the big thing. So when you look at Chito Vera, you got to believe he knows that, look, I had him in a chance where, sure, I beat him, but did I really beat him?
Right.
Like, that's the thing. So for Chito Vera, like, again, you go through his fight history, he has a win over Pedro Munhoz. Well, no shit, so does fucking Sean O'Malley. But he had a loss to Corey Sandhagen, and since then, you know, a win against Dominic Cruz, so Rob Font, like Frankie Edgar, guys that are okay, good, and especially a Corey Sandhagen, but lost to Corey Sandhagen last year.
Yeah.
So, again, does not deserve a title shot. I think that Merab deserved one. I think even Aljamain. But Aljamain,
Merab
for sure. But I think Aljamain.
Timing, just. He'll be next, you'd assume.
Yeah. Aljamain really rubbed me the wrong way when he was talking about the fight, how he's going to move up, and he didn't care right before he fought O'Malley. Then he lost to O'Malley, and he wants a rematch against O'Malley. O'Malley wants to fight Chito because he wants to avenge the loss, and Aljamain's pissed off. It's like, dude, shut up. Like, you just complained, and you said the whole time you were going to move up no matter what, and then you're sour that you lost.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that. I think he deserves a title shot more than a guy like Chito Vera. But for O'Malley, this is bigger than that. Chito Vera is going to have to do exactly what he did before. Attack him with leg kicks or take him to the ground, push him against the cage. O'Malley loves to back up and read his opponents and throw a bunch of switches and catch you. He's a counter striker, but he is so damn precise. You watch the knockout win against Aljamain Sterling. The dude watches a punch go right beside his face. It rubs his face. And then he just counterpunches, boom, knocks him to the ground, has the back,
unraveled.
Has the hammer. Yeah. Like, this guy is so slick and so fast, and that's the one way you can slow him down. Leg kicks, taking him down. Jan did it a little bit, but again, he didn't have a lot of the strikes. You need to get this guy against the cage. I want to see if Chito, and I don't want to see it because I don't want Chito Vera to win, but Chito Vera's got to get him against the cage, kind of dirty box him, and kind of keep him at distance and see what you can do. And O'Malley knows that. That's the one thing O'Malley's done against Jan and, you know, these guys, Aljo. He knows that these aren't easy fights. Even against Aljo, there wasn't much in the first round. He did a lot of reading, and he kind of stood there. Then right towards the end of the fight, Aljo kind of puts him up against the cage. A little bit of, like,
That's true.
It was a, like, basically a draw first round, but I'm going to give
you're going to want to see Chito, if he's going to have a chance on this, take advantage of that early part of the first round while O'Malley's kind of feeling you out, which he does have a tendency to do early in a fight, as you just mentioned.
He's a counter striker. That's the thing. That's so what they live on.
So can Chito Vera get in there quick and not give him that and I'm not saying finish him in the first round, but rattle him in the first round, right? Like, throw him off his game a little bit. Yeah. Would have to be his approach, to be aggressive very early while O'Malley's trying to feel him out.
Yeah, and so there's going to be a lot here. Again, the reach, like, it's not. It's about an inch and a half reach in favor of O'Malley.
Yeah.
Height is a three-inch height advantage that he has here now. So I still think O'Malley wins this fight, but it's one of those fights where, you know, and I love O'Malley. He's one of my favorite fighters to watch right now, especially that he's the champion. But again, like you said, he's got the Irish tattoo on his back. I've got the Irish family. I've been telling my family, I'm watching this with my Irish cousins on the weekend.
Nice.
We've been jacked up about it for years. This is one where, for O'Malley, you're going to get this win, and everyone's going to say, who gives a shit? And I think that's the only problem here.
That is the drawback.
And the only reason he's fighting Chito Vera for the belt is because it's O'Malley's name and he could sell this card no matter who he's fighting. Hmm. And so that's the thing. I want to see. I think he wins. He's the heavy favorite here, you know, -275. Yeah. Like, there's a reason he's the heavy favorite. Again, Chito Vera doesn't deserve this title shot. He's getting it because of the loss, and he has a lot to prove
in this
fight.
There's a little pro wrestling to it. We're selling the story more than the actual, you know, merits.
Exactly. So I'm excited for it. I think O'Malley wins this one. I think that there is a chance that it could be very interesting, but I think he wins in the first three rounds.
So last thing for you before we get out of here, and we're going to get you back in here before UFC 300. So we're not going to go through that card, you know, piece by piece, fight by fight here. But I got the feeling, and it's no disrespect to anybody on the card. When you look at the UFC 300 fight card, there's a lot of really good looking fights on it. But were you surprised or disappointed when we saw that the main event of UFC 300 was going to be Alex Pereira and Jamahal Hill? Because historically speaking, and it's maybe a little unfair, but like, UFC 100 was stacked, right? You had GSP versus Thiago Alves. You had the rematch between Brock Lesnar and Frank Mir. Like, that's summer 09, and that is in the peak of the UFC's explosion coming out of that Ultimate Fighter era. And you move through and you get to 2016, 2017, whatever it was, that we have UFC 200. And even then, they had booked some big stuff. John Jones, I believe, was supposed to fight Daniel Cormier on that fight, but there was some injury issues. They brought back Brock Lesnar, who was at the time under contract to WWE, so that was a big deal. And they used that to sell some star power. And they tried some things for UFC 300 that they wanted to do. There was talk about bringing back Ronda Rousey, and she might fight again. There was a brief conversation about Brock Lesnar, who is now 46. I'm not sure that was ever likely, especially once he ended up in some... he's been tangled up now, allegedly, in the Vince McMahon stuff. That's getting uncomfortable. They clearly wanted to do something big. And I think Jamahal Hill, Alex Pereira, for us UFC fans, will be great. I think this card will be great. But in terms of selling it as like your big 100, 200, 300 that gets the casual fan, maybe people who haven't watched in a few years but are still sort of interested, is there enough here to sell 300 the way they sold 100 and 200?
Yes, I think so. I think that there's enough on the card.
The lapse fan.
I was disappointed by this announcement. It sounds like it was a desperation one because
it does.
Everybody,
like,
I think they were talking about it, was whether it was Jamahal Hill. I think he had the interview right after they made the announcement, but he was saying, "Yeah, I didn't even know about it till the day before."
Yeah,
we
were supposed to fight 2 days before, the one day before. Yeah,
and they were supposed to fight at 301 in Brazil for Alex Pereira to get the, you know, a title defense against that. But again, I look at this card of 300 and I say, okay, like Zhang Weili, title defense, co-main. Justin Gaethje.
She's one of your favorites too.
Yeah, I love Zhang Weili, yeah. But Justin Gaethje, love him as well. But fighting the BMF title against Max Holloway, yeah. Okay, a guy that's already struggled to move up into a division, and Justin Gaethje, who deserves a title shot or at least to be in that mix of a next, like, what are you doing that for?
Doing that BMF title fight is clearly because it's 300. Like, we got to keep stacking this. We got to make it feel like a bigger deal, right? Yeah. Like, Holloway's not a.
Well, it's just—I don't know. I feel you, and that's—it's something. Charles Oliveira versus Armin Sukarian. Like, this is a fight where the winner is going to fight for the lightweight championship instead of a Justin Gaethje, who I think deserves the championship fight. You got a Yuri Prohaska versus Alexander Rocic. You know, Aljamain versus Calvin Kattar. Bo Nickel versus some random dude. Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez.
But like. You can see what I'm saying. This is a good card for people who like fights.
Yeah.
But if you want to sell this to the mainstream,
yeah.
I don't know that there's enough name power here. It's going to have to sell on its own. UFC 300. This is our biggest.
Yeah, and that's the thing. For the UFC fans, I think this card is better than 299. But the thing is there's not enough star power and there's not enough selling power.
I think 300. You're right.
I would have loved to see Brock Lesnar come back. But you know what? He screwed himself by getting a – what did he get? Like a
Oh, he had a drug issue.
He had a drug. Steroid issue, and he got the exemption, so he had to fight Mark Hunt. He ended up, like, I think, beating Mark Hunt.
Yeah,
and then he got screwed. Yeah, he got screwed, and then it turned into a disqualification because he failed the drug test after, even though he was supposed to have one before. But like you said, it was last minute. I saw the GSP rumors.
Yeah,
I was happy that it wasn't Dricus du Plessis versus Israel Adesanya, because Israel Adesanya announced he was retiring like a few months ago, and it's like, oh, well, we're going to bring this back. Dana White put himself in a shitty spot by saying the main event for 300 is going to be something that UFC fans are going to go crazy for.
Biggest one,
and then like everyone was like, no. I've heard so many people that were turning down fights. Hazmat Shumayev turned down a fight. Like, there was so many main event fights that we've heard were turned down, and Leon Edwards accepted them. Like,
well, Volk, after January, he was like, whatever, I'll go at 300. And you're like, dude, you need to take some time.
Right? Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know what I mean? They're in a spot where they were in a tough spot. But again, I would have loved to see a little bit more for the heavyweight championship or something in the main event. I would have loved to see John Jones fight there against someone.
Sure.
Stipe, what are you doing?
Could they make Conor versus Michael Chandler finally happen? Nope, again.
Dude, right? That was supposed to happen, and then it wasn't supposed to happen. They're still not. They don't have a fight.
That was going to happen in December. September before that, I think. Like that, I don't know what the
which
hell
either makes me believe that Conor's not passing his drug testing and they can't really get by it.
Yeah.
Or there's something going on here, because he even tried to hint that he was maybe going to fight at 300.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it went quiet and nothing happened. It's like, well, why not?
But even if you could have, even Conor not being what he once was. You'd put that on top at 300 and go, see, sometimes this is for the casuals, right? Sometimes at a big event like this, UFC 300, real fight fans know this is not the true main event, or this is not, you know, what it once was. But you're trying to sell this because you only get to do it once every, 5, 6, 7 years, you know, in terms of hitting another 100 milestone like this.
Yeah.
This one will be miles smaller in terms of name value than 100 and 200.
Yeah. Happy Jim Miller's on it, because he was on UFC 100 and 200,
cool.
So the respect factor is there. I love that. That's why I would have liked to see a GSP or a Brock Lesnar, just for the fun of it. I would have liked to see Brock Lesnar, but hey, like, throw Brock Lesnar in versus Derek Lewis, or maybe not Derek Lewis, because Derek Lewis won't wrestle and anything like that, and that's all that Brock will do. But I want to see Brock Lesnar fight. Again, he's not going to. GSP would have been fun, but again, I don't think he's fighting against nobody just to fight, and I don't think either of these guys were coming in to not fight for a championship or be a main event fight. So again, it would have been a throwaway fight. I don't know. I'm okay with it. But I look at like 299.
To me, this looks like one. Sorry to interrupt you there, but like, just this looks like one that fight fans will look at and go, "This is worthy of being UFC 300. This is a great card."
Exactly.
But the casual will look at it, or the fan who hasn't watched in 3 or 4 years will look at that and go, ah.
These two guys that are headlining have barely been in the UFC 5 years.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, Alex Pereira has been in the UFC for a bit and now a couple of years. And, you know, Jamal Hill has won the Dana White Contender Series a couple of years ago, coming off an injury and now kind of trying to get his belt back. Like, it doesn't. And again, it stinks and reeks of desperation from Dana White and the UFC. And sure enough, like, again, he put his foot in his mouth by saying that it's going to be a crazy main event. But I look at, like, this fight, you know, this fight card. Why was was O'Malley versus Marlon Vera? Well, because 300 is going to sell no matter what because it's 300, and this is one where they wanted to sell.
Yeah.
So I look at that. But again, like we've looked at 299, and we barely got to the first fight of the night, which on the main card was Yan versus Song Yadong.
Yeah.
I look at the prelims, Curtis Blaydes versus Jolton Almeida. Jolton Almeida is on his way of making his way up the heavyweight division right now. Mm-hmm. If he wins this fight, he deserves you know a serious contender fight.
Right.
You know, this is big. Macy Barber versus Caitlin Chookagian. Matheus Gamrot versus RDA. Pedro Munhoz versus Kyler Phillips. Those are the prelims. Like, that's crazy.
On 299.
Yeah, on 299. Yeah. They have a guy making it. Well, I'll save that for the end when you say there's one fight. But again, those prelims are pretty big. Curtis Blaydes was a guy fighting for basically a title shot a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Like, not even a year ago, I think it was. And Jolton Almeida is a guy that's also coming from a Dana White Contender Series, a much different kind of heavyweight that has the takedown ability. And he fought Derek Lewis, and it was a very boring fight, but he's a guy that gets down, submits, or ground and pounds you. So that's one I'm curious to see. But like for 300, it is disappointing. I thought that we'd have more. They're hoping on the 300 selling no matter what. Again, you and me are going to be watching it no matter what. And I hate shitting on 300, but it's like, okay, again, I'm just not as excited because they put so much build up to it, and it was just like, okay, this is your heavyweight, two guys that, yeah.
This
okay.
is, and the comparison, the easy comparison would be, for a wrestling nerd like myself, WrestleMania, right?
Sure.
There's going to be better wrestling matches on other things, but WrestleMania is your big event of the year.
Exactly.
So that's when Ronda Rousey makes her debut. That's when Lawrence Taylor wrestles Bam Bam Bigelow. That's when The Rock comes back, despite the fact that he's old and can't, you know. It's for your celebrities. It's for your mainstream. It's these sorts of things. And 300, I think they wanted to do that. As you said, Dana went on a microphone and over-promised and has now been forced to under-deliver. And so for fight fans, we're going to be excited. Mm. But I think for the mainstream, this will be a disappointment. And so I think your prediction...
The fight of the night, I already know, is going to be Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway. Yeah. Because Justin Gaethje's just that guy. Because
he's like, crazy as fuck.
Yeah, he's crazy. And he's a guy that wants to box. And again, I'm curious to see how Holloway does moving up to the end of the, you know, from featherweight up to lightweight. But again, I don't know. This is something...
But I think your prediction that 299 will be the biggest fight card of the year in terms of most buys... Mm-hmm.
Unless O'Malley fights somebody else big.
That's a ballsy pick 1 month before 300, but I think you're right. I think O'Malley has the name, and even like you said, Dustin Poirier underneath, you know, I think 300 has the potential to be the better card, but I'm not sure it sells more. So I think that's going to be really interesting.
And I think we're also not talking enough about Michael Venom Page being this guy that has enough of a bring and an excitement
level.
Yeah,
he's got a following
from England. Like, that's the thing. He's an English fighter. He's only got the two. Like, there's enough from this card that is going to make people want to buy a UFC debut from him. And I'll even get to it now. But Robles Despain, I told you about him, I think, on the last time I was on this card. But this is a guy that's like a judo and taekwondo Olympian.
He's on 299?
He's on 299. Yeah. And he's on the early prelims.
Okay.
So if you
Facebook fights.
Yes, the Facebook fights. But this dude is 6'7". He's 35 Ooh. Years old. He's an Olympian. He's kind of a judo, kind of taekwondo guy. He's 6'7", 265. His last two fights have lasted 7 seconds combined. 7 seconds. Like a 3 and 4 second knockout. And his third fight, so you go back 3 fights, 12 seconds. So his last 3 fights haven't even lasted 20 seconds, dude. Like, this is a guy, he's crazy. He's got the longest reach ever in UFC history at 87 inches. He's got...
Give me his name again.
Robles Despain.
Okay.
And he's a Cuban fighter. Yeah. He's the only problem with him is he's 35 years old. He's a bit older, but, you know, Yoel Romero was fighting, I think, in the Bellator PFL stuff and 46 over the weekend, still showing up. But again, this is Josh Parazin is a guy that's, you know, not much about him. He's 34 years old.
Sacrificing
but this
his
guy's,
body.
Yeah, 87 inch reach is the longest reach ever in UFC history.
Yeah.
It's like Kawhi Leonard reach. Like, this guy is the
John
guy
Gonzalez.
That he's exciting and everybody wants to kind of watch this guy, but he's the early prelim. So I'm telling you, watch the Facebook fights.
Early.
You get this. It's one of the last fights on the early prelims. But that is one I'm excited for and I want to see. That's what I thought would be on a 300. Like, a guy that has this much excitement and hype. And like I said, this guy is serious. And hey, maybe he's not going to be this big crazy guy, whatever. But again, he's 35 years old. He's got these crazy knockouts. If he gets a big knockout win here against Josh Parazin, he's going to get the Alex Pereira where, you know, you're in the mid-30s and we want you to fight somebody for a title fight really soon. So we're going to rush rush you to a fight pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So he's going to get that treatment. He's not going to get the long road to the title shot. He's going to get a three or four fights, and if he has some big knockouts, he's going to be fighting for a title shot very soon, or he's going to be fighting the Tom Aspinalls, the Derek Lewis's, and these guys.
He's going to be in a championship fight with less than 1 minute. Yeah. Octagon time.
Seriously, that's the thing. Like, this guy's crazy, and I'm excited to see him. But again, I already gave you the other prelim fights. Like, there's a lot on here.
Yeah.
Like, RDA versus Matheus Gamrot. Matheus Gamrot's a guy that was
How is that not a pay-per-view quality fight?
It is. Man. Macy Barber, one of my favorite to watch right now, too, for a little while, the future.
Yeah.
Caitlin Chookagian, I know she has a different name now because she's married or whatever.
Yeah.
But either way, and Joel Almeida is another, like I said, heavyweight, where I think he's putting himself in a position where if he gets this win, he's in there. Okay, like, who am I fighting? He's fighting a Pavlovich or an Aspinall.
Yeah.
Probably not an Aspinall, but he needs a fight because he just beat Derek Lewis. If he beats Curtis Blaydes, this is a big-time fight. So I look at 299, and it's got depth all across the board.
Card,
300
man.
Does too, but it's more like, okay, these are good fights for fans, but what do you really – and again, nobody knows who Robles Despain is, but they're going to find out this weekend. And he's someone that I was reading about, and I'm like, this guy is exciting. So that's my fight to watch is the – or fighter to watch out of the all of this card is the early prelims. Robles Despain, 4-0, Cuban heavyweight, 87-inch reach, dude. 87-inch reach. Apparently, like, that's a reach for, like, someone who should be 7'4". And he's 6'7". Like, this guy's a monster. So,
it's curious Kevin Nash in there.
Yeah, and he's got the knockouts with his hands, the legs. Like, again, crazy guy to watch. Excited to see him. It's hard to compare the two. And like I said, I think this is going to be one of the biggest selling pay-per-views of the year.
Yep.
Curious to see what happens for O'Malley if he wins this fight, who he fights next, how that card goes, what card he is on next. He's from Montana. I don't see them getting a card there. But he's going to be fighting, and he's going to probably represent Vegas. He lives in Vegas or California in the hills. Like, this is a rich, rich dude that's expensive. Like, he's exciting, and he's someone you really want to watch. So I can see this one, no matter what, being a better sell than 300.
I think that's ballsy talk. I'm intrigued to see how that plays out. We will get you back in here before 300 because
we'll tee up 300. 100%. We have to recap this
100%, man.
And tee up 300.
Right, hundo. It's been a good week on the Tall Can Audio podcast. Like I said, our friend Andrea from the Bytown Beer Sisters was here. Lever Sage was in here. Angela Thompson from Lake of Bays Brewery was in here. Dean Brown's been in here. Steve Bunda's been in here. We capped it off.
Went down
nicely.
The hill pretty quickly.
That's where we'll wrap this up. Bunda, as you know, I always appreciate when you come in, man. A lot of fun talking fights. Nice to be able to do it when we're not a little rushed before you having to head off to work, and we can have a pint or two and just shoot it around. So appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, and I'm hoping I can sneak out of here without the Tall Can Audio fans knowing.
Maybe they saw
my vehicle in the parking lot, and they're going to be surrounding. I'm hoping that it's dark and it's laid out, that they don't come after me.
They go home early. They're kind of half-milers, right?
I hope so. I hope that they were already in bed when I got here or eating their dinner time. That was the other thing. I kind of snuck in right around dinner time. But once again, though, thank you for having me. Thank you, Angela, for the pints. They're tasty. I'm loving this New England IPA. The Starboard is very tasty, so thank you very much for that. And again, Matt, thank you, and I can't wait for UFC 299. Let's go. Sugar Show.
Love it. That's where we'll wrap this one up. Hope you all have a fantastic weekend. We are back on Monday morning, Rob and myself, with a whole new week of Tall Can Audio. For Steve Bunda, my name is Matt Robinson, and we'll see ya.
The hell is that?
Number one bullshit. Oh, number one bullshit.
Why are you so pissy?